Session number 16576, Jim Miller, Reel 10.
Mr. Miller, Reel 10. We were talking about your time working on an irrigation canal off the, while you were at Grunfleiss. Was there anything else to life other than working on the canal and sort of sleeping? Did you do anything else?
Well, here's another instance when we're in this hut. We all, most of us slept naked because we were lousy. Absolutely, we slept on straw. And for night usage, we had a big wooden, half wooden tub. About as big around as that, wooden tub. That was for night usage.
About 3 foot across.
That was put in the, well, it was round. That was put in the middle of the room. Well, I slept in a corner, and all the lights were out at night time, not a light. And I had to, if I wanted to use that, during the night, I had to gauge, because there was four hours of lads sleeping, right? And I had to gauge where I could walk without stepping on these lads to get to the tub. Well, we all heard that coffee, drinking, and all this cabbage soup. Right, I want to go. And I remember I got up one night, must have been about 3 o'clock in the morning. And I steadied and went along carefully, and I felt the tub, and it was full. Well, I had to stand there, and these lads say, "You dirty." There were some of the lads sleeping around this. There's Arthur Flowen as well. Oh, I had to get back quick, But that was how we were. And, that tub had to be emptied every morning, and there was two poles, a lad there and a lad there to pick it up. Like, it was very heavy, And I remember one lad, there was 5 steps to come down from this hall onto the ground, and it was ice. The steps were icy. Of course, young Bear Cave Dunkel, Wolverhampton. I don't know what happened to the lad, but he slipped. And they used to tip all this onto a garden for us, like manure, and that went. Now, the Germans, Weihnacht, Christmas, 40, the guards, they brought the wives there to have a party with them. And it was about 12 o'clock at night. The lights switched on in this whole row of sleep. We had to get up. Get our trousers on quick and all that. In lines. And the guards brought the wives in to inspect us. Dirty, rotten British prisoners. And there's the wives had mink fur coats on. I suppose they'd all be pinched. And print. And there was I met a chap called Teddy Nollishot some years ago. And he remembers it. He was telling his missus what I was doing. I had some lice, and I was dropping them on the front of the women. They were drunk. So I don't know what them fur coats are like after a while. It's quite true. They had black spots on them, these lice. Oh, gee, terrible. And we used to sit there, we have nothing but to do, killing lice. In these big boiler tubs where they used to put the soup and that, they used to boil our clothes in there, and you could see the lice skins on the top. Horrible. And
did many people, you said your stomach was all right, but did many people get ill?
Oh yeah, that diarrhea. There was one young lad, he was at the Tyneside Scottish, I remember, a tall lad, he's nearly as tall as you, and he had the diarrhea, and he'd done it in his blanket, and there was a row of blankets in this hall, on the shelf, and we had to fold it up, put it back, and pinch one of these blankets to give to him, you know. But this blanket there was full of muck in there. Anyway, there was an officer came around one day inspecting the blankets and had to pull them all down to have a look. And they pulled this one down. Oh my God! Oh, there were hell eruptions. Swine on it out there. Anyway,
how did the guards treat you overall? I mean, were they
rotten? This work, we had to work. Couldn't stop.
But were they brutal, or were they just
push you and stick them in, get moving, they were. I think they came from Czechoslovakia. Not Czechoslovakia. They weren't a proper Germans, the guards. I don't know, but and then I left that camp. I had to go back to hospital. I had to go back to the camp. My leg had gone and my chest was bad.
You need.
And I went back to Stalag 8B. That was about December, January, I don't know. It's on my medical sheets anyway, when I went back. It's on my medical my sheets. And I remember I was supposed to go to the hospital, but the hospital was full. They didn't do anything to me. And I remember a German officer out the medical, he gave me a spoonful of medicine, cough medicine. That's all I ever had. And I got fed up again.
What was the problem with your chest? Did you always have a bad chest? Did it just get worse
Well, it got worse and worse, you see, but I did have a bad chest.
What, bronchial?
Bronchial, yeah. That's what I've got now. It's chronic bronchitis. Anyway, before I went on this first working party, can I go back?
Yes.
Right. I was walking in the camp, Stalag 8B, and I was going to go on this job, this first job, like, and they were shouting, come on, hurry up, we're waiting for you. And I saw this chap walking towards me, and it was George Blackburn, me mate. Oh, God. I said, I couldn't ask him what happened and everything, but he was in the camp. So the Germans must have been very kindly towards him, the same as were to me in a way. So they could have shot us. And I said, George, give us your address, hurry up. And that my pay book there, his address is on there, on the pay book. It's paid now. He lived at East Bolton. I said, I've got to go to George, anywhere. But we'll leave that for a minute, like. I had to leave George, and he was alive. Oh, that was nice. Anyway, I went on another working party. Well, I don't know when I went on this one, because I was in the camp for a bit. But these are some of the lads on this party, see, I told you, about Hormann and these. And we went to a village called Hof. They're on there. These are some of the... I don't know how I got them.
H-O-F.
H-O-F. In Sudeten, where is it?
Sudetenland, yeah.
Or later, is it? Oh, East Sudetenland. East Sudetenland.
And what were you doing there?
It was a sawmill went on. Logging, cutting timber down and sawing into planks. And...
Where were you? Where did they put you? What was
in the in the village jail? In the village jail.
And how many were there of you?
There was five of us at first.
And what was your sort of daily routine of work and life?
Now then, piling logs. Right. Which is hard to say when I first started. Oh, two of the lads, they went into a carpenter's shop, and they were doing carpentry. I don't know what they were making, but I think what they were making was huts. Whether they were for the German troops or whether for the British prisoners, I don't know, but I think that's what I wasn't sure, because nobody said to know what they were. And one night, this... we were very near to this sawmill where the sawmill was, and it went up in flames. It was burning. And I said, God, we'll get blamed for this. So the guards came in and rushed us out, and we had to march up, and we had to start putting the fire up with buckets of water and things like that. And I know one that was chucking buckets of oil on the road. It was bizarre. Anyway, that disappeared, and we all had a sweat on.
Now, you haven't told me what you were doing in the sawmill first. Your work was.
Yeah, I don't know. You see, there was carpentry as well. There was sawing logs into planks and things like that.
But what were you doing? Is that what you were doing?
Well, I was helping to take the bark off. You know, like, say, when they're in planks, there's bark on the inner. Well, I was trimming the bark off on a saw. I don't know what
it was. And then the sawmill caught fire after not long.
No, that sawmill. And the house. The house was right in the saw that went up. And we all had a sweat on, you know, because we thought we'd get blamed. But they found out it was an electric fault. The Gestapo were there, were all there, you know. Whew, went off. Anyway, I started building a new sawmill. And we hadn't much to do. I don't know, clearing muck away, you know, all that after that. And some of the villagers, these were different people, the villagers. Yeah, they weren't nasty. Anyway, I had to come off the job what I was doing because my leg had gone on me again, and I became the cook. Poor lads, I was happy on there. Well, before then, of course, Red Cross parcels. We'd had the Red Cross parcels on the first working party.
What were they like? What was in them?
Very good. We had Canadian ones and British ones, and there was chocolate and soap and tins of meat and that stuff you spread on bread, Marmite. You know, you're good. Well, the Germans, on our first, they used to open those cigarettes and all, and the Germans used to break the cigarettes open in case of, you know, in case there was secret messages, all that bunk them. And the bayonets, they used to stab it into tins, work them around like. And this German, there was a tin of tomato puree. He didn't know what it was. Of course, he stuck the bayonet in and he was covered in tomato. We had to laugh. We used to do some horrible tricks and all on parade. I've got to go.
Hang on, stick to, so how did you dole out that? Stick to the food first. I'll come back to that. How did you... the Red Cross parcels, how were they divided up amongst you? Then?
Oh, yeah. The first ones that came through was one between eight. A parcel between eight men. And we'd made some plain cards out of, you know, bits of cardboard and that, and we used to cut the ice at first pick and so, you know, next and so on. And they'd sit there studying, because they were cut into eight pieces, you see. The biggest. Of course, the bloke was at the lowest score, he got what was left. That went on for quite a while. And then it was, they didn't come all that regular. The Germans must have been holding back. And then at the end, we did have a parcel. And they used to come about every month, I think.
What, your own parcel?
A full parcel, yeah. I think it was once a month. And I used to be the cook, and I used to make some good meals.
So the men would give their parcels to you as cook?
That's right. I had a little kitchen, right? And I had all stacked
up. Is this
up.
In the jail?
Yeah. the guards were down below, you see. There were stairs.
What cooking equipment did you have then?
Oh, we had pans. The Emil Richter was the name of the fellow that owned the sawmill, Emil Richter. The Russians shot him when they come, so I heard. They shot all his family, I think, when the Russians got there. But...
And what food would you the Germans give you to cook? Or would
yeah, these people, they were kind of different. I used to go shopping with a guard, and this Emil Richter, in a way he was German, but the family were all right, they got the nose, and I used to go and get wurst, leberwurst, you know, liver sausage. He used to, you know, one of the big meals, but there was... tasty, and we also get decent bread as well, not the green, you know, kept us alive.
So the food was much better there.
Oh, yeah.
That was all you had to do was cook?
Yeah.
So it was a cushy job?
Trust me. No, but I couldn't, and that was my job.
And there was there enough food now then? Hmm? Was there enough food, or would people?
Yeah, the lads used to enjoy it, yeah.
Now, you said that you used to play tricks on the Germans on parade, dirty tricks. What were they?
Well, we were all lined up, of course, and they started counting, I ain't fine, dry, fear, from, you know, that one lad would step out and go in the rear rank, you know, quick. But when they counted this first row, there's, say, 40 men. And he'd count the back row, and where there should be 40, it was 42, something like that, where there should have been 40. They did. There was a swap over quick. And the Germans, so they gave that up, I think, counting. They couldn't count. Understand what I mean? There's one missing. He shouldn't be missing, but he was there. They were funny. I don't know. And the lads in the camps used to make their own little stoves out of bits of tins and that to cook. I don't know how they did it. Some clever lads, you know. The Flem used to heat whatever with the Red Cross parcels used to cook. And there was Jewish lads in the compounds, and they would have a Red Cross parcel. And then he'd pork in their tins, they used to swap, using some fish, was to swap over. That was the short time I was in the Stalag. I wasn't there too long, you see. But I was on this working party right up.
Did you prefer it on working parties, then?
Oh, yeah. It kept us happy, and we were doing something, not just sitting around in the camps.
Did you have anything to do with the camp entertainment? When you were in the camp, were you aware of the sort of concert parties bands?
That's Jimmy Yao. I didn't see any of that.
So you prefer... Now, anything else about the sawmill time, when you were on cook, how long were you doing that for then?
Oh, right up to the end.
So, we're talking three or four years?
Yeah. And the people in the village, they got to know us. Good and broken. And somebody used to put cigarettes in a little hole as we marched by. The cigarettes, you know, some German. Yeah, we used to, we didn't have cigarettes. And the messages. Woman, she used to send me cigarettes. I lost her address. And I used to write letters back to her. Thank you, that about Churchill, how's the Reverend Kirkbride doing? Good. And she was saying, I bet the Reverend Kirkbride's doing, getting over his flock. Kirkbride. Kirkford. And then I never saw her. It's just, yeah. Well, I used to,
How often?
4 months. 4 months.
Did you worry about her?
Of course. It was all right. She was working. She worked. She was living with her mother. Many letters off my mother.
Was she?
Yeah. Because he was practically keeping her as well. I'd been in the land dormant. I couldn't do anything.
Remember. Was it just a pretty routine life for you?
Routine life. Well, And, somebody gave us a gramophone, you know, with a horn, you know that. And we had a couple of records, and one was Lily Marlin sung in German. Well, the German. Well, listen to the bugle. No, it was the Germans, they're English. Like, it starts, listen to the bugle, listen to a call, listen to the... Bugle calling one and all. Different words from what on Lily Marlin is what those chaps used to see. And while I was in this jail, there was some bars like in this room. We were in bunks, two, and one like. There was, the room was a little smaller than this, the prison room we were in. So it wasn't so bad. And we had a stove here.
So did any more join you? Did any other prisoners?
Yeah, oh, yes, I'll come to that. Right. Yeah. And this big, he started building a big sawmill. And, oh, before I became a cook, I used to help with a house. He's having his house built where we had to go to work. Like, and I was a bit afraid of heights. And I'm on the roof when their roofs are like that.
Very steep.
You know, like that, yeah. Yeah, it was all right. I was still living. And anyway, yeah, the sawmill, we started getting a lot of Australians in. And New Zealanders from Crete. I've got
All right, sorry, yeah.
Remember pictures of me? Yeah, there's some of them there. No, I don't. I'll go stack to you. Anyway, there was quite a lot. And the first time I heard that song, Now Is the Hour. Now Is the Hour. A New Zealander was singing it, a little fella. I thought it was great. We all used to sing Now Is the Hour, you know, passed down with.
And where were the Australians and New Zealanders living?
They were in big bungalows away from us.
So it was just your five in the jail? That stayed right to the end, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, and...
Now, one of them, you said off that one of them built a little radio.
Yeah, unknown to me. You know, where he got the parts from, it must have been with cigarettes and, you know, and he had this crystal set. And unknown to me, there was an attic, and they got in this attic.
In the jail?
He had it hidden, this wireless. And they must have been listening every night, because a chap called Bill Mangai, he was a very intelligent man, he drew a large map of Europe and where the Russians were and everything, and all the towns, you know, coming forward, yeah. And on the 5th of June, the night before D-Day, before they landed in Normandy, we were all listening. And the Germans didn't know anything about it. We knew. And then on the 6th, when the landing was made, we knew they were there. But the Germans in this village didn't know. They knew nothing. And also, when Italy packed up, the Americans had air bases there. And this one day, about 11 o'clock in the morning, I'm sitting there. I think I was writing a letter. I said, don't stop it anyway. And I heard this terrible roar in the sky. And I looked out through the bars up in the sky, and there was all these planes for thousands, and the Germans, civilians, they were counting eins, zwei, they were counting them. They didn't know they were American bombers. There was an area of shelters for them, and they had run when they said that Americanish. And every morning 11 o'clock these bombers used to come over. And what bombs hadn't dropped on the targets up in the north of Germany, they used to drop them anywhere. And then the Germans were putting posters up that they were bombing schools and hospitals where the children were. You know, we got frightened about that as well.
But, why? What did you think would happen? Can you just explain?
Civilians, like, you know, I thought the civilians, when they saw these posters and the turn against, you know, like, you understand what I mean? But they didn't. They were different people, these were. Vastly different people. Sudetenlanders.
And how did you feel in yourself? I mean, you were a prisoner for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, did it start to get to you at all?
No, I got used to it. We didn't know when the war was going on. It's a funny feeling. Thousands and thousands of us were the same. It just took life.
You didn't think of escape, though?
No, there's no need to. We couldn't go anywhere. It's all snow. We were up in the mountains. Well, you couldn't go anywhere.
So you were following. And you could tell the war was coming to an end then?
Oh, yeah. We had this map of the Russians and...
Did you start getting excited or optimistic?
Well, we did, but we didn't shout too much. We knew for days that our troops and the Americans were well in. knew them. Oh, and then just before the war ended, of course, the guards said, pack everything up. Come on, you've got to go. And we were walking or marching. Well, we were walking with the guards. And we rested. We'd gone a long way. And women were coming out their houses and imploring us to stay. Because they knew the Russians were coming and all these German women. You know, just go, don't leave us. You know, they, what's me? Couldn't do anything. And we rested. We had a rest. And the guards, they took a bunk. Left us. Yeah. What could we do? We didn't know where we were.
How many of you were there? I mean, was it the Australians as well? Or was
no,
it just,
no, just a little lot. I don't know what happened to the Australians.
So just five of you?
Yeah. And we split up. Split up.
Why?
Well, I thought if we were in a bunch like... we split up. I was on my own, walking. And the lads,
which way were you going? Which way were you going?
I didn't know. No, just well, we. You know, this is strange. This is there were refugees starting to come as well. You know, they were getting away, and I was with German refugees, and they were looking after me. That's quite true. Oh, and the Germans give us new uniforms. We had new uniforms on.
British uniforms.
Yeah. Some of these part of the Australians, well-to-do. Yeah, they give us a... Well, empty, you know.
With so a lot so of you Germans, were marching...
A lot of Germans themselves were wearing British uniforms. I know that. So I was with these refugees, the Dayton Landers, and... Because I could talk a little German, like. Yeah, they understood me. And... Well, they give me food. Yeah. And I left them. I don't know why I left them or whether they left me or not. And then I met up with the Russians.
And now, what happened when you met the Russians? Because there can be trouble when you meet the Russian army as it approaches.
Yeah, the Russians, I was with them. Okay. I had to say, Anglo-China Vari, Chinglish Comrade. I rode on the tanks. And... I was on this tank and they were on the way to Prague. And the Russians were also riding horses, little onies. Some of the horses were dropping their heart, galloping to see who was first into Prague, you know. And I was on top of this tank with the Russians and they would have a stop. And the good of a house, just take any house, however. Come, you know, I had to go over there, like. And the first house we were in, there was a family there, a girl, she was about 20, a daughter, and I don't know what kind of people they were. They must have been Germans, anyway. Were they Czechs? Anyway, I was Russian officers as well, they were officers. And we sat around the table, we had something to eat, and it was half roast pork. Pork, no cutting with a knife. Well, I didn't have much in my stomach at the time. Anyway, they had vodka. And I thought it was water. I'd never seen vodka. It was really white. And the port got these glasses off this woman and glasses and stood up and the toast at Stalin first. Stalin. You had to take him. God, burnt me. Roosevelt. Churchill. The next thing I knew, I was lying on a settee and I'd vomited all over the... Oh, my God. And this girl came and I said, I'm very sorry. I said, I'm very sorry. She said, all right, not to worry about, you know. And then we come out there and as I say... back on the tank again.
The Russians had a bad reputation with the way they treated German civilians or Czech civilians. Did you see anything untoward?
No. And I mean, as we were travelling, the roads were lined with people cheering like the devil, you know. And they took me off the tank. And they went on, and I went into Prague on my own.
So you just met this Russian unit, travelled with them for a while.
Yeah.
Had they not asked you questions about who you were or where you'd come from?
No, just an English gent of origin. I couldn't speak Russian.
But that means?
Then you're always British. I like them. They're okay because they used to, at night time they used to stop, and the Russian girls, they used to dance. You know, like the.